Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If there's a culture war, the religious right has started it. The religious right has this book that they're trying to make the world follow.
Shutting down government is unbiblical. Because government has a biblical responsibility to care for the poor, they're against poor people.
God told me that we are our brother's keeper. The labor movement is our brother's keeper. So help me God.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you would like to make your wife feel ugly without saying a word, then you've come to the right place. This is Wretched Radio from Faith It. I think Faith It, it's not quite, well, I don't know what it is, actually. It's a website. I just don't know what their particular perspective is. It's kind of all over the place. An article from one Amberly Lovell, L-O-V-E-L-L, 6 subtle ways to make your wife feel ugly without saying a word. I have to confess, many of these were a bit of a surprise to me. So, sir, if you'd like to make your wife feel like that, this is just for you. Number one, fail to compliment her efforts. That's right. Just never, never notice how she looks. The effort that she puts into presenting herself mostly for you. Never say anything nice about it, because she will simply interpret your silence as disapproval. Sir, may I ask you a question? When was the last time you said, honey, you look great? You look nice in that. I really like your fill in the blank. Has it been a while? If it has, you could be subtly telling her, I don't think you look very good. Number two, a way to help your wife feel ugly without saying a word. Praise another woman with words you've never used with your wife. Ooh, can't imagine. If you're referring to a woman as drop-dead gorgeous, and you've never used those types of descriptions to describe your wife, guess how that makes her feel? Not good. Not good at all. In fact, I would suggest as a rule, I can't think of any good reason why a married man should ever say any sort of comment about the way another woman looks, good, bad, or otherwise, frankly. In fact, I was thinking about the tongue this morning and how James describes the tongue, that little rudder that controls the ship, and how it's such an untamable thing. Why? Is it because the organ itself, that it just, it no. I think this goes back to the intents of the heart. That's really the issue that God describes as being the thing that he judges. Even think about going back to Genesis 6. In fact, I don't know if I can find it, but nevertheless, I'll give it a go. It's in your Old Testament. Genesis chapter 6. Why was God so angry with the world that he destroyed it with water? It's because he noticed that the people were evil. Well, it's not exactly what it says. It says that he noticed that the intentions of their heart were evil. The Lord saw the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. In other words, it's what the tongue only reflects what's going on inside, which is why it's so hard to control. And even if, this is where it gets even trickier, there's another level to this tongue-controlling business. Even if you get to the place where you bite your tongue, you see somebody at church, they're dressed weird, whatever, and you want to say something and you go, no, I'm going to control my tongue, and I'm not going to say a word about the way that goofball looks. You really haven't accomplished a ton. You've accomplished something, but it's the heart. The tongue won't wag inappropriately if your heart is under control. And so it's good that we frequently don't say what perhaps is on our mind, but what is more Christian is making sure that our mind isn't thinking those bad thoughts. That's why it's so difficult. Because look, just zipping your lip on occasion can be quite easy. I mean, it really can. You say, well, I have a difficult time. I bet I can disprove that. You're just not trying. Because I suspect if somebody burst into your home with an Uzi and said, shut up, you wouldn't say boo, would you? You'd want to, maybe, but you could control it. That's only one element of the tongue. It's what's motivating the tongue to go wagging like that. That's the more profound issue. The intentions of the heart. Sir, I don't think that we ever need to be talking about the way women present themselves, good, bad, or otherwise. I don't think it's... What is there to benefit? I'm trying to think of a scenario even as I speak. What would be a scenario where it would be worth... All right, Tony, you go to a church, all right? And let's just say, just for fun, there's a woman at your church. Do you have women at your church? I know it's pretty small. Are there any women?
We do.
Okay. Yeah, there's a woman at your church. And for some reason, this particular Sunday, it's pretty clear to everybody. New outfit, more effort, whatever. What benefit would you gain from telling Robin the way that this woman looked this Sunday? Hey, you know what? Betty, she looked really, really good. What? I can't think of any reason. All right, let's do it conversely. Betty looks super
frumpy. Of
course,
at my house, Robin would mention it to me first.
But what do you benefit from? What is that? All you're doing is telling your wife, I sure noticed a woman today.
No, but she would mention it to me. I wouldn't have to mention it. So she was dressed very nice today. I would, being a good husband, agree.
Yeah, okay. But that's not my point.
I know.
You bringing it up is the issue. Yeah. Now, let's just say Betty was a super frump this week. What benefit? Hey, Robin, did you notice how dumpy Betty looked today? What is that, murdering with your tongue? I just don't see any benefit from ever saying anything about another. Number three, you can make your wife feel ugly without saying a word by looking at pornography. Nothing will make her feel more despairingly inadequate than you looking at pornography. And please spare us both the old, well, she doesn't know routine. Somebody sent me. I can't remember what ministry it was. They're actually promoting that a husband and wife look at pornography together. It'll bring a little zest back into their marriage. You're kidding me. Mm. Oh, somebody else. Somebody sent me an email from England. They're Irish, but they sent it to me from England. There's a movie about MMA fighting inside of the church. All right, we've seen this before. A movie was made about this. They beat you up in Christian love. This is what real men do. Whatever. And they claim, guess how many churches in America, they claim, are into this MMA fighting. They'll build a ring in the inside of the church. People come and they watch two guys beat each other up. But they've got a cross tattooed onto their shoulder. Guess how many churches we got?
They're countable?
Apparently,
wow.
700.
I have no idea.
700
what?
Is what they claim. Yeah, exactly, 700. And all God's evangelicals went, oh. Want to make your wife feel ugly? Number four. Don't initiate a hug or a kiss. Well, that's your loss, sir, but it's also telling her, I don't think that you're beautiful. I don't think you're worth a hug without ever saying boo. Number five, do a double take when another woman walks by. This from Amberly Lavelle. You cannot understand how deeply it hurts your wife to see you check out another woman. And here's the line for you, sir. She writes, and trust me, she notices, even when she doesn't say anything. Isn't that a gift from God, that we can actually read eyes? You can be talking to somebody. I don't think you're really listening. How do you know? Your eyes. I can just tell by your eye. Or when somebody's looking at you, but they're kind of looking at what's over in the corner, you can just tell that, can't you? That you can just... Why didn't God create the eye so that it could stay stationary, but just catch everything in its purview in equal measure? I think in part, I'm speculating here, I think it's in part it's so that you could get busted for checking out a chick, what I'm thinking. That's a Hebrew word. You want to look that one up. Number six, you want to make your wife feel ugly without saying a word. Peek at your, now this one is subtle, peek at your phone while your sweetheart is talking. In other words, you just tell her, yeah, I'm listening, but there's other stuff that I'd like to...
So close.
Little late. You basically tell her, there's other things more interesting than you, darling. Help her feel beautiful, writes Amberly, by prioritizing her over your Facebook feed. I know that checking out the cell phone at meals all the time, it's becoming more normative. It's like the train coming to town. We all got used to it. It's like the telephone being attached to a wall. It just became a culture. It became a part of our lifestyle, and so too will checking out cell phones. I get that, but that doesn't take away as much as you get used to it.
Oh.
That's a good bar right there.
See, and if I did that, I'd be getting yelled at right now on the very radio.
It doesn't feel good, does it? All of a sudden, somebody just stops talking and do something else. Okay, it's food. But Facebook is no different. When we cut away from the conversation to go check out something else, we're telling everybody. I find this, actually, I have to tell you, though, I don't find this bar more interesting. However, oh, good. Grass-fed whey protein. I have no idea what that means, other than I sure could use a cup of water to go with it. When somebody cuts away from talking to you, you go, well, that was rude. When you do that with your wife, it also tells her she's ugly. This is Wretched Radio.
It's time for a drive-by minute.
Also, knowing that the Spirit lives within, it gives us so much hope. He gives us hope as we battle against sin, as we're committed to battling against sin. As much as we see the corruption of the indwelling sin, we know the Spirit sees it so much more clearly. As much as we hate our sin, we know that the Spirit hates it more. As much as we're offended by our sin, we know that the Spirit is so much more offended by it. And so now we know we're fighting alongside God the Holy Spirit. We're doing battle with Him as we together go to battle against sin, hating that sin and longing for it to be destroyed. And of course, knowing that we're indwelled by the Spirit, it gives us motive. It gives us motive for putting sin to death. Every Christian wants the dwelling place of the Spirit to be worthy of the Spirit. Every Christian longs for himself to be undefiled by sin.
You can get Drive-By Pneumatology and all of our Drive-By resources at wretchedradio.com.
Judge Not is a book that dares to violate evangelicalism's first commandment, Thou Shalt Not Judge. Todd Friel will satirically and painfully expose some of the decay in the underbelly of the contemporary evangelical church and point to a solution to help rescue the church, save souls, and glorify God. So if you'd like ideas to put an end to the silliness that has permeated the evangelical church, get your copy of Judge Not, available now at wretchedradio.com.
The value of a human life, infinite. The cost to save a human life, staggeringly low. Preborn.org, an amazing ministry that provides free ultrasounds to women who find themselves pregnant and considering an abortion, see their babies, and 80% of the time they choose life. What does it cost to provide that free ultrasound? $28. $28 to save a human life. Would you please consider 5 free ultrasounds for $140 so that lives can be saved, because those lives are precious? Visit preborn.org, preborn.org.
How do we know that Jesus appears in every book in the Old Testament? Because Jesus himself said so in the Gospel of Luke. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum will lead your Sunday school class on a study of Jesus in the Old Testament. This in-depth study guide will help your class know that the Bible is supernatural and reliable as they see Jesus woven throughout the tapestry of the Old Testament. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum, available now at wretchedradio.com.
Books of the Bible. Zephaniah begins with a shocking prophecy that God will sweep away everything from the face of the earth. But in the midst of judgment, God offers hope of salvation. Zephaniah gives us a picture of God's terrible wrath and reminds us of the wrath Jesus took upon himself for our sake. Flee to the Savior and be saved.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you would like to get a divorce, well, you probably don't need our help. Nevertheless, you've come to the right place. This is Wretched Radio. Aren't we just a helpful radio program today? For your consideration, 9 habits that lead to divorce. Not that anybody wants you to get a divorce, but these are things you might be doing and you don't even know it that are contributing to a decaying of your marriage. Now, they might not lead to divorce, but chip, 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 it can chisel away. And one day you just might find yourself sitting in a pile of rubble going, what happened? How did this end up like this? And by the way, can I just do a separate shout out to the men for just a second? I will somewhat regularly hear from fellas who are in big trouble in their marriage. Things are going kafritz. They know it. They sense it slipping away. And they're rightly so. They're in a bit of a panic. Can I just suggest to you, there is perhaps no greater time nor greater example of being a Christian man than in that situation? We have a tendency to take our cues from the world and far too often in evangelicalism that defines a man as somebody who can strangle a boar with his bare hands. I'm not talking about like a really like tedious, tiresome person, like a boar, like a wild pig sort of boar. That's hardly it. That isn't what makes a man a man. I don't think that there's a better demonstration of digging in, going down deeper than you ever have before, doing more difficult things than rescuing something that's broken, especially when you're involved in it. Now, I'm not talking about necessarily that your relationship is on the brink of divorce, but sir, when things are just off, do you lead through them? Are you the one who fixes it? Or do you just kind of let time? Is that the pattern? And believe me, I get this. Been there, done that. You said some words, there was a disagreement, people were just crabby, tired, whatever. And rather than dealing with it, you just figure, I'll just let it, I've got to go to work tomorrow anyway. By the time I get home, she'll be fine. That's not leading. Now, that maybe demonstrates just a touch of self-control because you don't engage and start throwing more darts, but that isn't leadership. Leadership is recognizing this thing is busted. This thing has got to get fixed. And if it's going to be put back together, I need to be the one. And the glue that you probably have to bring is humility, frankly. And work through these things. And here, just this one's absolutely free. As long as we're doling out male advice, we're sort of like, okay, we've got the view. That's ladies, that's what you get. It's not much. But what would the male show be called? It would be called probably ESPN, I guess. Monday Night Football. No, that's not what I'm looking for. It would Da Chat. No, Da Talk. Let's just go with that. So this is Da Talk for the fellas. When things are not happy, when they're not good, and you're to blame for them, you willing to take your knocks? Because we have a tendency to think, all right, look, I'm just going to say I'm sorry. Boom, done. So let's say you say you're sorry, and it's boom, not done. You prepared for the long haul? You're prepared to take a bit of a shellacking? No, I'm not suggesting that if you get one that your spouse isn't sinning. I'm not saying that. I'm just asking if you're willing to take it without erupting back or without retaliating. These are the type of things that I think without that understanding in a marriage and the fellow leading in that regard, woo, good luck, kids, good luck. I'll tell you, because you're going to be fighting before the tin cans get removed from the bumper of your car. It's funny how fast sin starts to just poke up its ugly, nasty head. It doesn't rear itself, its head during dating, does it? Everybody's so wonderful. Then you get married, and it's like, wow, they're so sinful. Surprise! And without some sort of sin plan, forget about it. I don't think you have a chance. 9 habits that lead to divorce. Number 1, being secretive with your online activity. Go ahead. You're marching toward divorce court. Number 2, dividing everything into his and hers. Marriage is about becoming one, not dividing. Separate bank accounts? Really? You got to have separate bank accounts. You're in trouble already. You want a separate bank account? You're in trouble already. When you said one flesh, we're together in this, that goes for our stuff, too. It's not yours anymore. It's ours. Right? Unless you're marching toward divorce. Number 3, putting the marriage on hold while you're raising your kids. That's pretty easy to do, isn't it? Look, and part of the reality is it changes. It can't be the same. That when the kids come along, it does demand a lot of time and attention. Unless you want them to starve, unless you just want to have them sit in a soiled diaper all the time, it takes some time away from things. Nevertheless, you got to make sure that the marriage is first. It's always first. This, I know it smacks young people pretty hard in the nose. The kids are second. And this might be one especially for you, Mom, because you probably are more likely to have the kids in front of the marriage than the fellas. I'm just guessing, but they can't be. Because if the marriage isn't strong, the kiddos are going to suffer. Number 4, if you want to get a divorce, give each other your leftovers. I'll share my leftovers if there's not enough of them. I am so sorry. That is not what this is talking about here. Some married couples were great at giving their best at the beginning of the relationship, but as time goes by, they start giving the leftovers. This one again, sorry, this is for you, fellas, because after all, you're listening to Da Talk. When you walk in, it's not leftover time. It's not scraps. It's not sit down in the lazy boy. It's get on it, summon the energy, and kick it in gear. Okay, you've had an exceptionally bad day. Understood. As a rule, it's not time for leftovers unless you want a divorce. Number 5, holding grudges and keeping score. If you've been married for longer than 15 minutes, chances are you've been offended, you've been annoyed, there's been some sin in the house. Forget about it. Lose it. Don't remember those grievances. Now, if it's an ongoing sin that requires some attention so that you can help your spouse grow in holiness, that's good. That is right. Not to grind it in their face, but to help them grow in holiness. But other than that, we don't keep score of stuff, do we? If you remember the bad thing that your spouse did years ago, you gotta start growing in grace. The problem is not with what your spouse did to you. The problem is that you aren't growing in how much you understand you have been forgiven by God. That's really the problem. Because when you spend some time considering how much you have sinned against God and that he doesn't keep score because of Jesus, that helps you to, not keep score. Number 6, trusting your feelings more than your commitments.
I don't want to be.
Too bad. You said you were gonna. Now do it. Unless, of course, you want to march toward divorce. Number 7, making decisions without consulting your spouse. That's always a good time, isn't it? Just go ahead and be a wild, wild west man. You're the cowboy riding the range. You make decisions as you go. Now, look, you're going to put on a certain pair of socks. I don't think your spouse needs a consultation. But living life together, doing stuff together, you should be consulting one another. Why wouldn't you? Number 8, trying to change each other. That's right. You want to march toward divorce? Just try changing one another. Now, if you want to help your spouse grow in sanctification, you want to help your spouse grow in their love for Jesus, but that's not the point of this particular article. The only person that you can change in the marriage is you. You can't change your spouse. That's the role of the Holy Spirit. You can help. You can encourage. You can support. You can teach. But you can't change. Furthermore, watch out for the behavioral modification. It is so easy to do that. Wowza! going through that right now myself in our home. And I think I've even written about this. Don't try to change your kid's behavior. Guess what? I've been trying to change my kid's behavior. Very easy to do and very annoying. And by the way, you can't accomplish it. Unless, of course, you want to get a divorce. And finally, if you want to get yourself a divorce really, really quick, plan and... Plan an exit strategy. In other words, start conniving and scheming. If you really get to that point, how you've been Googling divorce? Lawyers? You've been trying to figure out how to get out of it? Then you're marching toward it. Lose it. When you said, I do, that was till death. Don't have an exit strategy unless you want a divorce. This is Wretched Radio.
You don't need to page all the way to the book of Matthew to find Jesus in the Bible. Our Savior appears in the very first book of Genesis and in every other book in the Old Testament, if you know where to find him. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum will show your class where and how to find Jesus in the Old Testament. They'll see for themselves that the Bible is about one story only, Jesus Christ. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum. Available at wretchedradio.com. The world's fastest growing sect of Christianity is not Christian at all. Chances are likely your child, your church, are getting infected. That's why we produced Drunk in the Spirit. The New Apostolic Reformation boasts 369 million adherents. Drunk in the Spirit from Wretched Radio will let you know who these people are, what they teach, and why they're such a threat to your family and local church. Drunk in the Spirit. Available now at wretchedradio.com.
Important dates in Christian history. 1906. The Azusa Street Revival in Los Angeles, California, launches Pentecostalism and paves the way for the development of the modern charismatic movement. Pentecostalism is marked by a focus on supernatural gifts such as healing and speaking in tongues. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Like a hot knife cutting through butter, this is Wretched Radio. Don't know if you saw the clip. We posted this on Facebook. Nevertheless, it's worth enjoying perhaps one more time. Recently, Ben Shapiro costing you and me our tax dollars, I think it was $600,000 to visit Berkeley to speak.
To keep him safe.
Just to keep him safe. Wow. The times, they certainly have a changed, haven't they? A fellow stepped up to the microphone. I'm not sure that he was planning on a gotcha or what, but he tried to engage Ben Shapiro. Quite honestly, I would not engage Ben Shapiro on anything. I wouldn't even want to engage with, hey, Ben Shapiro, I want to talk to you about your name, Ben Shapiro. It would frighten me because he would, whoa, the guy just is sharp and wow, is he zingy. This young man had the courage, probably not the wisdom, but the courage to step up to talk about the issue of life. Bad idea.
My question was about abortion, and I just wanted to know, why exactly do you think a first trimester fetus has moral value?
Okay, so a first trimester fetus has moral value because whether you consider it a potential human life or a full-on human life, it has more value than just a cluster of cells.
Okay. I hate to argue with Ben Shapiro, but I'm going to because I'm pretty certain he doesn't listen to this. Otherwise, I'd be terrified. We need to bring in the issue of Imago Dei here. We can't just say that human beings are more precious than animals. There's no ground for that. Serious, there's just no reason. Says who? The issue here is authority. We always go back to that issue. This is all, whenever there's a clash of worldviews, it ultimately goes back to the issue of authority. Says who? That should be the first question that gets asked repeatedly in a conversation. Says who? Otherwise, that's just your idea. You got to give me more than that. Sorry. I like you and everything, but I'm not going to change my life because you say so, says who. And so when Ben Shapiro rightly said that human beings have more value than a dog or whatever, He has no basis for stating that other than it's his claim. The Christian, and Ben Shapiro should know this too from reading the book of Genesis, we have value because we're image bearers.
Left to its natural processes, it will grow into a baby. So the real question is, where do you draw the line? So you can draw the line at the heartbeat, because it's very hard to draw the line at the heartbeat. There are people who are adults who are alive because of a pacemaker. They need some sort of outside force generating their heartbeat. Okay, are you going to do it based on brain function? Okay, well, what about people who are in a coma? Should we just kill them? Right. The problem is, anytime you draw any line other than the inception of the child, you end up drawing a false line that can also be applied to people who are adults.
That's very true. But with all due respect to Ben, why? Says who? We have to bring the Bible in. And to all of the people who say, oh, they don't believe the Bible, that's precisely the point. If we leave our authority source at the door, then why couldn't I respond to Ben Shapiro and say, no, Ben, this young man, if he had any moxie about him or any debate skills, would have said, wait a second, you just made a claim without any proof to support it. Why are human beings precious? I think chickens are, specifically free-range chickens, which I still don't understand the difference. Maybe it was one is in a cage, the other one is...
We don't have a cowboy hat.
All I know is that the free-range chickens, as a rule, and I'm going to state that about pretty much everything, because then I've always got a caveat and an out. As a rule, I always feel like the free-range chickens, they're less for eating and better for flossing. They're kind of stringy, and they're just... They don't have the nom, nom that the chemical-injected chickens have. That's good eating.
So either human life has intrinsic value or it doesn't. I think we both agree that adult human life has intrinsic value. Can we start from that premise?
I believe that sentience is what gives something moral value, not necessarily being a human alone.
Okay. Again, now Ben does a fine job here of arguing it, but this could all be stopped by simply claiming, no, God says humans are made in his image. And there is a transcendence to that.
Okay, so when you're asleep, can I stab you?
I'm still considered sentient when I'm asleep.
Okay, if you are in a coma from which you may awake, can I stab you?
Well, then, no. I guess not. I mean,
I'm glad you answered that, because I have no interest in actually murdering you.
But that's still potential sentience, and it's still a potential...
I agree, it is potential sentience. You know what else is potential sentience? Being a fetus.
Caught in a trap, man. And he can't get out. Well argued from Ben Shapiro. It's just unfortunately missing any sort of authority. Let's make sure that we are good pro-life apologists. Let's make sure that we've got it sharp and crisp. We do. But if anybody is a true thinker, they're going to stop us and say, no, sorry. Just your opinion. Vodi Baucom, of course, in Expository Apologetics. By the way, speaking of Vodi Baucom, does anybody have any sort of update on his physical health? I am not aware of anything new coming out of Africa regarding Vodi Baucom. I hope he is doing well, just haven't heard anything about him and his kidneys. Be nice to know, Vodi.
Quick update. He could still take you.
What?
He could still take you.
Well, that we know. That's a given. It's not like the man has gotten weak or anything. He just has some sort of issue with his kidneys, and he had a medical issue happen where two medicines collided, and now he can't use the medicine that was keeping his kidneys happy and healthy, and they were looking for a new class of drugs to help with that, and to the last I've heard, I don't know that they found anything. We want Vodi to be healthy. He argues that the Christian must bring the Bible to bear. Expository apologetics. Using the Bible. Don't keep your sword in the sheath. Take it out and cut them. You've got a supernatural ally. And isn't it almost getting kind of nice these days? It's funny how the pendulum swings and how epics change. That we seem to be in a season where it's like, you know, before... We had this sense of we kind of fit into culture because we called it kind of a Christian nation-y sort of thing. But now that it's so not, it's kind of different playing this role, isn't it? We are the outsiders, aren't we? I kind of like it because I think increasingly, I think people are going to start looking for something far more than what the world system offers because it leaves you feeling flat. That presentation that we did with Vodi Baucom here in the studio, by the way, I'll be looking for some details on that coming up as part of our new changes here October 2nd. Have I mentioned some things are changing October 2nd?
Vaguely.
Absolutely. Can't wait. It's going to be really, really fun. Enough of that, however. Be watching for the Vodi Baucom presentation on expository apologetics and discipline yourself. Every conversation that you're in to bring the Bible to bear, I don't care what it is. If it's the NFL conversation, here's my take. I don't know that this is a perfect rule, but here it is. If I can't bring something Christian to it, I think it's just better to sit and listen. If I'm sitting around the break room at the office, wish we had one of those here. If I'm sitting around that break room and people are talking about the NFL and the fact that the football players won't kneel, if I can't think of anything biblical, why not just sit and listen? Why do I need to contribute anything to that conversation? I think my input should be something that is unique. Otherwise, why bother? Everybody else is going to say what needs to be said regarding the subject. I'm not going to add any sort of secular thoughts that are profound and unique. All right, so let's just for yucks. Tony, Joey, I'm going to put you on the spot. We're talking about the NFL. You know, the football players, they wouldn't kneel down. What do you think about that? You got a Bible verse for me? Anything to offer about that situation?
They wouldn't stand. They kneeled instead of standing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but and? So what is the Christian take on that?
Fire them all!
Okay, I think we can get that, at least from Fox News.
I'm sure there's a Bible verse that says that.
Somewhere.
Well, I just...
Maybe Book of
Daniel. My point being that if I live in a culture that's really, really lost, and to engage in some of these issues on that level, okay, I mean, it's not a sin by any means, but don't I have something more that I could possibly say as opposed to, yeah, they're ungrateful. Anybody who's making $1 million a game and thinks that they're, what do they call it? They're feeling
oppressed.
They're oppressed. They need a psychologist. That's what they need. Okay. All right. I don't think that I need to say anything. When we enter into the dialogue, let us bring along our sword, because otherwise it's Ben Shapiro's opinion versus my opinion. It's the kid from the Stanford or Berkeley, I guess it was, versus whose opinion. We need an objective source of authority. Otherwise, we're simply spewing opinion. And we got plenty of those these days. What we need more than anything these days is truth. Only one source of that I can think of. This is Wretched Radio. Why should you consider sponsoring your own Tomorrow Club? Because of stories like this.
Moldova has been called the saddest place on earth. When you drive into these villages, it's so hopeless feeling. When we first came into town, there was a huge prison. One man was in this prison, and somebody went in there and started a Bible study, and he came to Christ. And eventually, he became the pastor of this little church, and him and his wife run a Tomorrow Club there. And we saw 14 boys who could have ended up in that same prison like many others. But instead, they were sitting there singing praise and worship songs, memorizing Bible verses, and it was so unbelievably beautiful to see the hope that has been brought into that village for the next generation.
Would you please help us write more stories? Sponsor a Tomorrow Club, please. Visit tomorrowclubs.org.
Pornography. The numbers are staggering. Sad. Scary. According to a Pure Life Ministries poll, 68% of evangelical men view pornography. And the same poll showed 50% of evangelical pastors admit to viewing porn. That's why Todd wrote Slaying the Lust Dragon. Get your copy today and learn how to put the pornography dragon to death once and for all. Slaying the Lust Dragon, available at wretchedradio.com. Parents have no greater joy than to see their children walking in the truth. Unfortunately, the odds are not in your favor. 60 to 80% of evangelical kids notoriously backslide. Your child does not need to be a statistic. Get Todd Friel's latest book, Reset for Parents. This book will truly change your home. To get your copy of Todd's latest book, Reset for Parents, go to wretchedradio.com. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Books of the Bible. The Apostle Peter wrote a second epistle to clarify and defend the Christian message. He asserts the authority of Scripture, warns against false teachers, and reminds us that the end is coming. But God is patient, allowing all of His people to come to repentance. If you want a clear contrast between true and false Christianity, look to 2 Peter.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is this a case in point? This is Wretched Radio. Unless you bring an authority to the party, it is merely a bunch of carbon fort. What are we? We're charcoal. We're human. I don't want to get all scientific and technical on you regarding
carbon-based human units.
That's the one I'm looking for right there. That's all we are, just arguing opinions, unless there is a source of authority. Dennis Prager, who is Jewish, trying to explain why murder is wrong. Or is it?
Do you believe that good and evil exist? The answer to this question separates Judeo-Christian values from secular values.
Among other things.
Let me offer the clearest possible example. Murder. Is murder wrong? Is it evil? Nearly everyone would answer yes, but now I will pose a much harder question. How do you know?
Or says who? Same thought, different words. The issue is authority.
I'm sure you think murder is wrong, but how do you know? If I asked you how you know that the Earth is round, you would show me photographs from outer space or offer me measurable data.
However, these days, what's up with this flat Earth business? Have you seen that on the internet? That seems to be a growing brouhaha that the Earth is actually flat. My understanding is that there's some sort of conspiracy. I don't know why. I haven't dug into it enough. That apparently NASA wants to persuade everybody the Earth is round. My question would be, why? What's the point of that? Furthermore, wouldn't the boats have fallen off the edge? Furthermore, don't we have pictures from outer space that seem to make it look awfully round?
Do we, Todd? Do we?
Yeah, exactly. See, they are trying to deceive us. Who are they?
They never tell me who they are.
That's they is who they are. Again, I haven't dug into it, but I just don't see any reason to. And let's just say that there is some sort of conspiracy from NASA. The question is, what does the Bible say? The Bible isn't crystal clear on it. The Bible, I believe it's in Job, talks about the circle of the earth, which certainly makes it seem like it's, you know, round. However, the Bible does also talk about, it makes the foundations of the earth. It could make it sound like, well, is it flat or sunrise to sunset? And the Bible tends to use terms that we use in common parlance so that we can understand what God is talking about. I just don't understand why this is suddenly such a big deal. And if you got any sort of proof of this conspiracy, well, okay, I just can't imagine what's to be gained by persuading people. Guess what? It's actually flat after all.
Is it, Todd? Is it?
You could be one of them, couldn't you, Tony?
Playing this game a lot.
But what photographs could you show? What measurements could you provide that prove that murder or rape or theft is wrong? The fact is, you can't.
Exactly. So now it's just a matter of opinion, unless there's an objective source of authority.
There are scientific facts, but without God, there are no moral facts. In a secular world, there can only be opinions about morality. They may be personal opinions or society's opinions, but only opinions.
That's it.
Every atheist philosopher I have read or debated on this subject has acknowledged that if there is no God, there is no objective morality.
Immanuel Kant.
Judeo-Christian values are predicated on the existence of a God of morality. In other words, only if there is a God who says murder is wrong, is murder wrong. Otherwise, all morality is opinion. The entire Western world, what we call Western civilization, is based on this understanding.
Now, here's a question for you. If indeed the devil comes up with great schemes, as is described somewhere in the New Testament in the book of James, that he comes up with schemes, what would you do if you were the devil? What would you do to try to undermine what is so clear and so obvious? What would you... You'd undoubtedly try to think, okay, wait a second. It's like, duh, if there's a desk, there's a desk maker. If there are values, there has to be an objective source of moral authority. Duh. How would you undermine it? Well, how's about just saying nothing has any meaning? Words don't have any meanings. Truth doesn't even exist. Everything is simply opinion, as if we are even here anyway, because we could simply be a big giant's dream. That would probably work, and it seems to be working just fine.
Now, let me make two things clear. First, this doesn't mean that if you don't believe in God, you can't be a good person. There are plenty of kind and moral individuals who don't believe in God and Judeo-Christian values.
From the Christian perspective, we would say, like Romans, there's nobody who does good, no, not one. He's talking about outwardly moral good citizens. Yep, atheists can be that. Mostly.
But the existence of these good people has nothing, nothing to do with the question of whether good and evil really exist if there is no God. Second, there have been plenty of people who believed in God who were not good people. Indeed, more than a few have been evil and have even committed evil in God's name. The existence of God doesn't ensure people will do good. I wish it did. The existence of God only ensures that good and evil objectively exist and are not merely opinions.
That is Dennis Prager nailing something that, well, needs to be nailed regularly. But remember this, even as we go about the business of persuading people that there cannot be a pair of eyeglasses without an eyeglass maker. Yep. There cannot be morality without a moral lawgiver. Yep. That will never convert anybody. Furthermore, it is very rare where I have seen people go, "You're right." Now, it doesn't mean Dennis Prager, by the way, he's not saved. And yet he has this sort of basic understanding. He's kind of reasoned this out. To a degree, he has. Yes. Because he reads about the God of the Old Testament, which is not the true and living God when we just understand that part of God as if he's not the Trinitarian God, because if you don't have the Son, you don't have the Father either. But his reasoning can only go so far. And ultimately, if I persuade somebody, okay, you know what, you're right. There's got to be a moral lawgiver if there's some standard of morality. That doesn't mean I'm going to be seeing anybody in heaven. They still need to hear the gospel.
Without God, we therefore end up with what is known as moral relativism, meaning that morality is not absolute, but only relative to the individual or to the society. Without God, the words good and evil are just another way of saying I like and I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no God, the statement murder is evil is the same as the statement I don't like murder.
Good stuff from Dennis Prager. That's one worth putting into your belt. And don't tell me that you think it's wrong, unbeliever. Tell me that you don't prefer it. Don't tell me that rape is wrong. Just tell me it's you don't like it. That's all you can do. That's the very best you've got. It is limited to that.
Now, many will argue that you don't need moral absolutes. People won't murder because they don't want to be murdered. But that argument is just wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Hitler, Stalin, and Mao didn't want to be murdered, but that hardly stopped them from murdering about 100 million people. It is not a coincidence that the rejection of Judeo-Christian values in the Western world by Nazism and communism led to the murder of all these innocent people. It is also not a coincidence that the first societies in the world to abolish slavery, an institution that existed in every known society in human history, were Western societies rooted in Judeo-Christian values. And so were the first societies to affirm universal human rights, to emancipate women, and to proclaim the value of liberty.
Yeah, but Donald Trump hates women. Or something like that. I don't know what the rejoinder is, but it doesn't really have much punch.
Today, the rejection of Judeo-Christian values and moral absolutes has led to a world of moral confusion. In the New York Times in March 2015, a professor of philosophy confirmed this.
Uh-oh.
He wrote, "What would you say if you found out that our public schools were teaching children that it is not true that it's wrong to kill people for fun? Would you be surprised? I was." The professor then added, "The overwhelming majority of college freshmen view moral claims as mere opinions." So then, whatever you believe about God or religion, here is a fact. Without a God who is the source of morality, morality is just a matter of opinion.
Precisely what we have discovered over and over again, revealed in Untethered, available at wretchedradio.com. Keep pulling out that sword and using it. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Thank you very much for being here. We always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched. Can we have a show of hands? How many of us survived the latest end times debacle? Yeah, most all of us. Let's talk about something important then, shall we? Like Wretched's biggest project. You know, that's where Trish and her crews take our biggest question DVDs and then hand them out to folks all over the place. College campuses, churches. If there's a place where people are gathered, sooner or later, the biggest project will be there. How can you help? Glad you asked. Go to biggestproject.com. Give you all the details on how you can help us. You can purchase your own copies of The Biggest Question and hand them out, or you can partner with us by supporting financially the DVDs on a one-time or monthly basis. Biggestproject.com will get you all the details. And thank you. Thank you for your support, because that's what keeps Wretched on the radio and The Biggest Project getting the hope of the gospel into the hands of others. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.